It almost feels like a cliche to say that it's never been worse, but truly, it's never been worse. You talked about that statistic, 0.6% of rentals being affordable for someone on the minimum wage. Since I started, my day job is at Anglicare Australia, and since I've been here in 2017, 0% of rentals have been affordable for someone on the job seeker payment, 0% on youth allowance, 0% on disability support pension. Which isn't surprising if you can't afford to rent on a full-time minimum wage. It's not a real shock that you can't afford to rent if you're out of work or struggling in some other way. But the thing that's been really interesting to see and really sad to see is that when I first started, people earning the minimum wage could afford about 10% of rentals. It's now down to less than 1%. So you can see we've had a really big change in just the last decade alone. We've got 10% rent increases coming through just about every single year on average. And if you look at the SQM data on average asking rents, it's gone up by about 75% since the start of the pandemic, which is epic. I don't know anybody who's had a 75% wage increase. The pension hasn't gone up by 75%. You know, job seeker, DSP, you name it, minimum wage, none of these things are going up by anywhere near the amount that we're seeing rent increases go up by. The Everybody's Home campaign has just been, well, we're in the middle of doing this People's Commission into the housing crisis, and we had hearings in Sydney where we were talking to people about their experiences, and we just heard real despair from really average people having really average experiences. You know, we heard from people who have had to move with their children every single year for the past decade, take their kids out of school because they're just being consistently priced out of the areas that they live in. Their kids don't even believe them when they say, "Oh, we're not going to move anymore. We found a home." We've had people, you know, talking to us about that in tears. On the other end of the spectrum, you know, for older people, when you're a renter and you're retiring into this rental system on a really fixed income, you know, we heard from people saying literally that they hope their life ends because they can't afford to retire, you know, they're finding it tough to find rooms in share houses at their age, and you know, being discriminated against by landlords and prospective housemates and things. And we also hear from people who are kind of just grateful to live in the homes they live in. We heard from an international student who migrated to Australia from the Philippines 5 years ago, and he lives in what the Daily Telegraph calls the smallest rental in Sydney. It's 12 square meters, so it's like the size of a car park. And he was just telling us how grateful he is to have somewhere to live. And he also told us a story about how he once had to go 29 days without eating food, just drinking water, because he was, you know, needing to keep paying the rent and works casually and wasn't getting consistent work, and keeps applying for rentals, keeps applying for affordable rentals, new places to try and live, and can't find them. So we've got a system that isn't working for people. I don't like to say the system is broken. I think the system is working exactly the way it was designed to work, which is to work for people who are investing in housing, and you know, casualties in that are people who need homes to live in.
Well, I think the biggest problem is most of the government policies that are claimed to try and make housing more affordable actually make housing less affordable. So, you know, first home buyers grants, basically preferencing one group by giving them more money or allowing them to be able to bid up the price even higher, only makes house prices even higher for everybody. And so, well, you know, I mean, there are basically two ways you can make housing more affordable. You can increase supply. So, you know, if the government went out there and, you know, it reversed its, you know, abandonment of public housing and it decided to actually go out there and build an enormous amount of public housing, that would make housing more affordable. Or it can decrease demand for housing. And that might seem odd at first, but what I mean is if you, there's been this sort of rush in the last 20 years to invest in housing. For people to think of housing as not a good where, you know, you go and you raise a family and you have security, but rather as an investment, something that'll, you know, build your financial nest egg for the future. And that investment, the creation of that investment demand, is actually what's driving house prices higher. May's right that the system is working as intended. So to give you some numbers, 25% of investment properties are owned by 1% of taxpayers. So we have a position now where there's lots of people rushing in to buy 2, 3, 4, or even, you know, 30 odd investment properties, and that's driving up demand. And they've got enormous tax concessions to do this. Things like the capital gains tax discount and negative gearing, those two combined are worth more than $20 billion.
But I think this issue about the government's role in delivering housing and the tax issue together are really two sides of the same coin. So we used to have an era in Australia where housing was really affordable several decades, right? And after the Second World War, governments in Australia basically built up the, you know, created the idea of public housing, built it from the ground up. And it used to deliver a lot of housing itself. The government used to build a lot of homes to rent to people. It also used to build homes to sell to people at the height of public housing in Australia. About one in three renters rented from the government, and about one in four new builds was being built by the government, right? One in three renters was living in housing provided by the government right up until the early 80s. So this played a really big role, not just in keeping housing affordable for the people who lived in those homes, but actually keeping housing affordable for everybody, because the government just had such a big footprint. And all sorts of people used to live in these homes. So public servants, construction workers, teachers, you name it. Once the government started stepping back from providing housing itself, it became a lot harder for people to get social housing. So now to get social housing, you really have to... It's extremely difficult, you know, like just at our People's Commission, we were hearing from people who were on waiting lists of about 10 years. But you basically can't be working and you've got to have some pretty exceptional circumstances going on in your life. Whereas this kind of housing used to be for everybody. So I would say that's the first big thing that the government did to push up the cost of housing in Australia. I totally echo what Matt was saying about tax. I mean, for us, that's really the other side of the coin to our campaign. We're a campaign for more social housing. We're also a campaign for tax reform. We know that when the government introduced the capital gains tax discount and more people started taking up the negative gearing tax deductions, it really changed who landlords are in Australia. So before that, most landlords of Australia were actually positively geared, which means they owned the house that their renter was living in, and you didn't see these 10% rent increases every single year. What we're seeing now is more and more housing is being delivered by these kind of highly leveraged amateur landlords, and we're seeing them behave in really different ways to what we've seen before, and you really can't explain it any other way besides the tax stuff. I will say I never use the phrase mum and dad investors. I think it's kind of manipulative language, actually. I say amateur landlords. I think there's downsides to having institutions and you know, people who own multiple homes providing housing. But there are a lot of upsides as well, because we know that when people are negatively geared, they're making a loss. They're really sensitive to things like interest rate increases. They're always trying to maximize the amount of money they're making. They're kind of skirting thin. We know a lot of people don't stay. People who own just one investment property often flip their homes after just a couple of years. So they aren't approaching it as though they're supplying an essential service. I mean, this is another thing I talk about all the time. I'd be really interested in Geordie's perspective on it. Your water provider, like your utilities, electricity providers, they can't just arbitrarily raise prices for no reason, and they can't cut you off very easily. It's like double digits in most states. They need to go back and offer you kind of hardship programs if you haven't paid. They're really tightly regulated. But when it comes to the homes that we live in, we just sort of allow these amateur people to become suppliers of something that's an essential service. And provided in this really loose way. I mean, even, the workplaces that we're in, your employers are obliged to make them safe. And if you have an incident at work, WorkSafe would be on site within about half an hour. When it comes to the homes that we live in, you know, it's a shit fight just to get, you know, minimum rental standards, like basic insulation, you know, caps on rent increases only exist really in the ACT. And I think this is all driven by the fact that housing is supplied by small time kind of hobby landlords.
And so, you know, I mean, if the government were to crack down on these tax concessions, as I said, they're worth about $20 billion a year. That would build a lot of housing. We could build housing for nurses. We could build housing for teachers. We could build housing for people. And we could build them in the places where people have jobs, where they want to live, in the communities they want to stay in. Public housing isn't just for really poor people. Even if you will never qualify for public housing adds to the stock of housing, and it reduces the demand for, when it's not there, then more people are demanding those rental properties. And so if you've got people going into public housing rather than the private rental market, then you're reducing the increase in rents. So it helps everybody, except for investors, by the way, because it will stop house prices going up as much as they're currently going up. They're the only losers, that sort of 15% of taxpayers who currently invest in housing.
A lot of opinion polls show that there is really strong support for tax reform, right? The Essential have done 3 polls in the last year, all showing quite a bit of support for tax reform. The Everybody's Home campaign did a poll with Redbridge earlier this year showing that 3 out of 5 people support winding back these tax handouts, and only 1 in 5 people oppose. And social housing, I mean, we don't even need to talk about it. It is incredibly popular. People want to see the government put more money into delivering housing themselves. The issue that we've got in Australia is that this debate is really driven by a small number of people with a lot of political power, and we need to build the political power and build a political constituency among people who actually want to live in housing, not just people who want to invest in it. You know, I've been keeping kind of a vague eye on the chat, and a few people have mentioned the 2019 election. A lot of people don't talk about the 2016 election. Labor went to the 2016 election promising to wind back CGT and negative gearing tax concessions, and they won 14 seats. A lot of things were going on in 2019. I don't think we should be inferring that this isn't something that would be widely supported. It's just going to be something that's really painful for a few people with a lot of political power. And the answer to that is for us to build political power among people who want to live in homes.
Please tell them where they can find out about the People's Commission again, one more time, please.
everybodyshome.com.au, and you can email if you want to share your experience with us as part of the commission, info@everybodyshome.com.au. We'd love to get as many stories as possible, even though they're kind of harrowing to read.